As far as I can remember, we have completed the section on Upeksha. And now we are getting into the next section, which is dealing with the practice of contemplation of the pure, Shubha Bhavana. Now, we should remember our text starts with Ashubha Bhavana. And now we are getting into Shubha Bhavana. It is very important to understand this sequence. And in a way, this sequence has been kept also in the only living tradition of the Shravaka practice up to the Arahathood, that means in the Theravada. We, since I have been trained in this tradition, when we want to master meditation, we are also following more or less the same lines. I have been trained in Burma, so all these things, in a way, they are very familiar to me. The peculiarity of this text we have explained is that Kumarajiva, being the translator of Pragya Paramita and the Pragya Paramita commentary and so on, is trying, this is very unique for this text, is trying to bring the perspective of the Pragya Paramita. Pragya Paramita means the perspective of Mahayana, perspective of the Bodhisattva path, into the classical pattern, which has changed nowadays. Meditators in China or Tibet, they are not trained according to this pattern. Kumarajiva himself was trained according to this pattern, and this pattern is still being used in the Theravada countries to train competent meditation teachers. So one starts usually, not necessarily with Ashubha Bhavana, to that one goes later. Usually one starts with Anapanasati, which is not mentioned here, but it is mentioned in Abhidharma Kosha. Then this is entrance into the practice of Dhyana. In the Theravada countries, also in the Kashmiri tradition of yoga, based on the Vaibhashika concepts, one starts, like in Theravada, also with the meditation on the four elements, Anapana and four elements. This is usually the entrance into the practice of concentration. Now, here we will have in the coming passage also contemplation on the four elements, but as you will see, interesting enough, from the point of view of the Pragya Paramita understanding, from the point of view of epistemology, showing logically the impossibility of the real existence of the atoms. Why comes the meditation on the pure after the Brahma Viharas? This is very important. The Brahma Viharas teach the meditator to develop positive sensations, positive feelings. I will talk in my discourse for the Vesak Day on the cultivation of the positive feelings being actually the essence, in a way, of the Buddhist practice. The essence of Buddhist practice is cultivating the more subtle feelings and to understand the feelings, because the feelings, they, or sensations, they control the mind. When you control these sensations, you control the mind. This is an aspect of Buddhist practice, very often neglected, but it is very essential. It is very essential for understanding shamatha and also for understanding vipassana. We cannot enter deeply into shamatha or vipassana practice without purifying these sensations. And our sensations are not pure because of greed. Greed is the cause of the sensations being distorted. When the sensations are distorted, the mind is distorted and the observation of the object is also distorted. This process comes together. On base of gross object comes gross sensation. On the base of gross sensation appears automatically a gross mind. And gross mind, of course, has many contradictions, because our contradictions are based basically on our greed. This is very important to understand. And in Buddhism, very important to understand, the defilements are contradictory sensations, contradictory to the purity of the mind. And the aim of meditation is, no matter what tradition we follow, the aim of meditation is the purity of mind. In a way, it is also the aim of all genuine religions. If we have a genuine motivation, and without genuine motivation, no genuine religion. If we have a genuine motivation, it is, we practice religion, it is because we want purification of the mind, because purification of the mind makes the society pure. Now, in Buddhism, same as in yoga, it is very important to understand there is an intimate link between yoga and Buddhism. The purification of sensations is integrated into the purification of the mind. The purification of sensations is impossible if the mind is not pure. And the mind, purity of mind, is not possible if the sensations are not pure. We have explained that the purity of sensations lead to friendliness or metta, compassion, which are base for our positive reactions, for joy, and for detachment. These are the signs of a healthy mind. Actually, kusala in Buddhism means healthy. Same idea like in yoga, the sattvic. We need to be sattvic. We need to be healthy to understand the purity of mind. Without a sattvic mind, without a kusala mind, we cannot understand the purity of the mind. And because we don't understand the purity of the mind, we are engaged in wrong motivation. All actions, this is very important to understand in Buddhism, start with right motivation. If we don't have right motivation, we cannot have healthy sensations and healthy mind. And healthy mind, of course, is also the base for a healthy body. Body can be diseased, but if the mind is healthy, it will react to the bodily disease in a healthy way, in a detached way. And this is wisdom. And we learn Buddhism in order to appreciate the wisdom of the ancients who understood this very clearly. So now we have seen how to practice the meditation on the pure. Now we will analyze the meditation on the impure. Now we will analyze the meditation on the pure. Subha-bhavana. Now, what is very important in Theravada tradition, we don't say this word, Subha-bhavana, but it is actually the same process. Only it is explained in a different way. After practicing the jhanas, and usually also when you practice the jhanas, you integrate the practice of the Brahma viharas, then you practice the kasinas, kritsna ayatana. This is very important practice in Buddhism, described in detail in Visuddhimagga, also mentioned in Abhidharma Kosha, in Vibhasha. This is very important practice. And it links us to the next passage, next passages dealing with the Arupa Bhavana. We have to understand, according in the days, early days, the practice of Buddhist meditation was necessarily connected with the practice of the eight liberations. This was a very important practice. Anyone who is a master of meditation, and to be a master of meditation, one has to attain also a high stage of vipassana, at least the anagami stage. So, to become a master of meditation, one had to master eight liberations. The first two liberations, they are concerned with the practice of asubha. The difference is that in this practice, one, in the first asubha, one takes the object inside the body. In the second, one takes the object outside the body. The third practice is the precisely what we have here, the Shubha Vimoksha, the liberation based on the pure. This liberation based on the pure is the practice of the fourth dhyana on a beautiful object. And you can turn the non-beautiful object into the beautiful object. We have explained in asubha, we have two types of asubha. Savijnanaka asubha, that means the meditation on the different parts of the body, 32 in the southern tradition, 36 in the northern tradition. It doesn't really matter how many, because it is not an anatomy practice. It is a practice to understand that the body is not beautiful. it appears beautiful when we see it as a whole, but when we analyze it part by part, we will not find a single part of the body which is really beautiful. So this non-beautiful can be turned into beautiful with the help of the kasinas. When you meditate on blood, you meditate on the red color, and it will turn into a beautiful color, mental color, like a shining ruby. And from object of disgust, you have acquired the object of beauty. Same urine, nothing beautiful about urine, it smells badly. But when you meditate on its yellow color, it will become like a yellow jewel, very beautiful. White teeth, bones, when you meditate on them in kasina practice, they will turn into a beautiful object, white color. Black, if you meditate on the hair, not my hair of an elderly person, but of a young person, then the hair, which when you take hair one by one, they have nothing of beauty, only when you see them on the head of a beautiful shaped head and face, then you will consider it beautiful. Now, the same object, when you meditate on it, will become a beautiful color, like a moonlit night. So, the mind has this ability to turn non-beautiful into beautiful and beautiful into non-beautiful. The Mahavibhasha says that Sariputra was such a skillful meditator. He visited the Trayatimsha heaven, Indra, and meditated Ashubha on the nymphs in the Trayatimsha heaven. This is the skill in meditation, turning non-beautiful object into beautiful and the beautiful object into non-beautiful, because beautiful and non-beautiful is all in mind, and what is beautiful for one is can be very non-beautiful for another, and what is the symbol of beauty becomes after some years a symbol of ugliness. So we never know that thing is really beautiful or really ugly. It's all our habits, our anushayas, our bijas, which we have in mind and which store our past experience of liking and disliking, and they control our mind. When we become aware of it, this is wisdom. And with this wisdom, if one has it, one can deal effectively with any life situation. This is the advantage of meditation, because you don't judge anything as being fixed. There is no such thing as something fixed in our experience. Everything that is fixed is only fixed in our mind. Beauty is fixed in our mind. Ugliness is fixed in our mind. Good is fixed in our mind. Bad is fixed in our mind. Now, this meditation on the pure here is precisely similar, not, I don't say the same, to the meditation on the casinos. In the Theravada tradition, you also take bone or skeleton for meditation on the impure. It is explained that all the other dead bodies, they are particularly good for some our sight of our greed to touch, greed to beauty, greed to whatever. But the skeleton is good for any greed. It cures us of all greeds because the skeleton reminds us of actually the process of how we become in the end. So when you go to the meditation centers in the Theravada countries, you will very often see the skeletons in the meditation hall, to remind yourself the inconvenience of greed for meditation. So our text starts with the Asubha meditation on the similar principles, but you can turn Asubha into Subha. Based on the principle of the Kasina meditation and based also on your mastery of or of your meditation on the Brahma Viharas. The Visuddhimagga, here it is not explained, but Visuddhimagga explains clearly the limit of metta meditation is the meditation on the pure. That is the fourth dhyana. The limit of karuna is the sphere of limitless space, which is following this explanation. The limit of the meditation on karuna is the limitless space, and the limit of the meditation, sorry, the limit of the meditation on the karuna is a limitless space. Limit of the meditation on the joy is the limitless mind. There are reasons for that. We can talk, we will talk about it maybe next time when we are dealing with arupas. The limit of the upeksha meditation is the sphere of nothingness, akinchana. And akinchana, we will also talk about it, means nothingness in the sense that kinchana is raga. Akinchana is no raga. And we have explained by upekha, we remove raga and dvesha, and thereby all defilements. Because all defilements are rooted in our liking and disliking. So, how to become master of the meditation of on the pure? This you are not given in the Theravada tradition, but here it is very well described. And it is also very interesting when you compare this explanation with the one you have in Abhidharma Kosha, there are some differences which show that actually different teachers, different traditions may have taught this meditation differently. Also, of course, Theravada, which was one of the many traditions. So the text says that the beginner in the meditation on the pure, he removes, literally breaks the skin, which means he removes the skin, flesh and sinews from the bone, mentally, of course. First, he contemplates the body with them. That is called in a Chinese tradition the hung ku or chi ku, which means red bone. First, you contemplate the red bone. It will come in our text also. Then you contemplate the white bone, paiku. Paiku means white bone, but paiku in Chinese also means skeleton. Both these meanings are there. So that is why it is a little confusing. Sometimes we can translate as a skeleton, sometimes we can translate as a bone, bare bone. So mentally, one removes the flesh and from the bone, from the skeleton here, because you always start with that which is bigger, easier, then you go to the detail. And he thinks about all other external objects. He gathers his mind again, returning it to meditation object. So he contemplates his skeleton and the other skeletons. All the bodies appears to him as a skeleton due to this practice of bearing the bone, making the red bone white bone. So the Abhidharma Kosha says, Asamudra asti vistara samkshepa adhikarmika. The adhikarmika means the beginner of the practice. He meditates on the skeleton, extending it as far as the ocean, and again bringing it back to the original size. So this is also the essence of the kasina practice. Due to the kasina practice, you can enlarge the object to contain the whole universe, and you can again make a samkshepa, make the object tiny, like a tip of the needle. Our mind has this capacity, and it is not so difficult to develop. We can, not on an object that we see with the eye, but the object that we see with mental eye, and this is done also, you can, in some traditions, you can also do it in the dream. There is a dream yoga. You can extend the object, mental object. Mental object is like a dream object. You can extend it to infinite, and you can again squeeze it into a tiny little space. Our mind has this capacity. Not our Mamsa Chakshu, but our mental eye. So as far as intermediate is called Krita Parichaya. Krita Parichaya means one who is acquainted with the practice. We translate intermediate, but it means one who has practiced for a long time. So the Krita Parichaya, he fixes his mind on the skull, not letting it wander outside, and trains like this. Now, in the Abhidharma Kosha, you will find a very interesting description. The intermediate meditator, he trains by using different parts of the body to remove the skull, remove the feet and so on, different parts, leaving one part the red bone and another part the white bone. And when he becomes familiar with his practice, he can do this on half of the skull, making half of the skull with flesh, half of the skull just white bone. He can make it with his whole body also. So he becomes very familiar with a practice. This is extremely interesting. When I remember my visit in China, there is in Suzhou, there is a statue of a famous meditation master called Qigong Shi, which means actually he's a master of Qigong. It is a Song Dynasty great miracle maker and great master of Kung Fu, of Tai Chi Chuan. And he is pictured, half of his face is very angry look, frightening like a devil, and half of his face is smiling, happy face. Such a mastery of sensations. Half of face, angry, frightful, half of face, smiling. So this may have been his practice, possibly. Then we come to the advanced meditator concentrates on one point. Now, according to Abhidharma Kosha, he concentrates brumadhyē, chitta-dhāra, dhāranāt. He concentrates in the between the eyebrows. This is in the yoga tradition, Agya Chakra. And as he concentrates there, it is explained here in a different way. It is explained in Abhidharma Kosha in a different way. This place will be shining over the whole universe like the sun. This practice is still done in some monasteries in China, like in Sichuan. So one can by concentrating on one small spot, and here it is also very important energy spot, then the prana, purified prana, will spread all around, and one will feel like being literally inside of the sun. Now here we have very interesting practice. I was told by my Thai friend that it is still practiced in Thailand in some monasteries a similar way. One concentrates on five places. All these are also energy centers in a way. So first the top of the skull, Brahma Dwara, the forehead must be again the same thing, this is Bru Madhye, the Agya Chakra. Space between the forehead is also in yoga between the Brahma Dwara and the Agya Chakra, there is a forehead center. So after this forehead center, then the space between the eyebrows, the tip of the nose, tip of the nose may be also a energy center, I'm not sure, and the heart region. This is also in yoga very important energy center. Actually, in a way, the most important one. So he concentrate on a small spot in these energy places and produces light, illuminating everywhere. Because these places, of course, are also connected with prana. And prana, when purified, is luminous. It is a very well-known thing. If his mind wanders to all other objects, he gathers it always the same thing. And he tries to dwell on these meditation objects. If his mind becomes weary, he changes the meditation objects. We have seen all of them in a way are connected with the power centers or prana centers. So here, well-known comparison, you will find the same in Visuddhimagga. It can be compared to a monkey chained to a pillar. He wants to run away but can't, so he gets tired and settles down. Visuddhimagga has also other examples, like a calf. When the newly born calf, you want to tame him because he's very like a small child, always trying to do some nuisance, you bind him to a pillar and he will settle down. So meditation object is like a pillar, mindfulness is like the chain, and the mind is compared to the monkey. Other comparisons here, wet nurse, the principle is the same. So when the mind gets the facility of dwelling or staying on the same object without being forced to do so spontaneously, it can merge with the object, and that is dhyana. Of course, In ancient India, this was in a way part of education. This practice is very useful to when the mind settles, you can put many things into that. So in the early days, education was by listening. They had to concentrate and remember and repeat again. Then the teacher would explain. In Burma, in Tibet, even now they have preserved this classical form of education. In India, in some traditional gurukulas, you still have also this type of education. That's why we say in Buddhism, first you start with Shrutamaya Panya, with the wisdom from hearing. Then what you have heard, you recollect and concentrate on it, that is Chintamaya Panya. Then you can, on the clear impression of your object, you can then practice meditation. Now, when the mind can merge with the object, when the dhyana concentration has been attained, there are three signs. The body of mental factors become joyful, pliable, and light. That is prasarabdhi we have talked about. The skeleton emits light similar to white jade. This is also, we have explained, the object become luminous. Even the ugly object becomes beautiful. The mind attends peaceful dwelling. That is drshte dharme sukha vihara. Dwelling in happiness here and now. Dhyana is a state of happiness because in dhyana you have no defilements. As long as one is in dhyana, no defilements appear. So it is like being in heaven. If defilements appear, it means you have left the dhyana. So this is called dhyana for beginners. The one-pointedness of mind, the dhyana is based on one-pointedness of mind. Now, Kumarajiva explained the terms for those who are not familiar. One-pointedness of mind is when concentration attains supremacy. And continues, and meditator continues to stay on one place without being compelled to do so, spontaneously. That is sahaja presence. When the mind is able to dwell on 1-inch spot, this is precisely what Abhidharma Kosha also says, 1-inch spot. Of course, a Chinese inch, they may, in ancient times, they had different measures, but we don't have a better translation than inch. Tsun. All impurities in the form of skin and flesh will be removed. So, the object become luminous. When the object become luminous, automatically, the sensation becomes subtle. And when the sensations become subtle, the mind becomes happy. The contradictory states of mind, the defilements, they belong to gross sensations. very important to understand. So Buddha explains, among others, the process of liberation, like Bahu Vedaniya Sutta of the Majjhima Nikaya. He explained the process of meditation by cultivating through jhanas more and more subtle sensations until over bhavagna, over the top of the universe, the top of the most subtle sensations, the na eva sanya na asanya, to nirvana. Nirvana is sensation beyond sensation. Sensation beyond sensation is the most subtle sensation, because there is not in it place for defilement whatsoever. And no subtle sensation in the world can be compared to the non-sensation of sensation. In Chinese tradition, we call this Pusho. The Arahat or the Buddha, he simply Pusho, he does not experience. He does not feel. Does not feel does not mean that he is he is not a human being. He is a perfect human being. He is a human being which is above defilements. Being above defilements means being above sensations. It does not mean not having sensation. It means having purified sensation. And we have explained purified sensations are rooted in the pure mind, and the pure mind is rooted in purified sensations, mutual relation. And this purified mind and purified sensations is only possible on the base of purifying the object. We have explained traditional practice for that are the kasinas, of turning the asubha into subha. And subha can be again turned into asubha, no problem. So this reveals to an intelligent person that the defilements, as the Buddha teaches, are agantuka, are guests to the mind. So the meditator purifies the object, then it says that by dwelling on the skeleton, actually you can translate the skeleton, as I have explained, as a white bone, and skeleton, they are same in Chinese. He can dwell on the skeleton or on the white bone or on the white spot on the bone. The whole body will emit white radiance from the surface of the bone, similar to that of the sun shining brilliantly on a clear day. So this is the power of the mind to purify the object and to make a small object into a vast object and vast object into the small object. But it refers only to the mental objects. It does not refer to the objects we see through the five senses. Please don't be mistaken. It is the mind and mental objects which can be thus purified, which can be thus enlarged or shrunk according to one's wish. This is the ripening in meditation. Visuddhimagga say, like Vibhasha Shastra explained this very clearly. One becomes master of meditation by developing this ability to turn the Shubha into Ashubha, Ashubha into Shubha, small object into big object into small object, and create, ultimately, this text ends with supernatural powers, ultimately also create the mental objects according to one's wish. Earth, he can create earth in the mind if his mind is very powerful, like that of a Buddha or of the great Arahats. You can walk on the water like Jesus Christ. All this is old techniques that the monks in Kashmir were trying to master. You can make earth into water, water into earth, fire into water, and so on, by creating a mental image. This practice is still done in Indian yoga. They are trained like that. This is not a Buddhist practice. It is a practice of mastery of concentration, which is the essence of yoga. So, very important, this last sentence. At that time, the mind will, that due to the power of this radiance, he sees the images of skeletons in other human bodies as clearly as appearance and disappearance of mind and mental factors. It can be compared to seeing water flowing in a tube made of transparent beryl. Now, when you read the Samanya Phala Sutta of the Digha Nikaya, you will find the Buddha teaching the same comparison. This is Vipassana. The mind is a flow, and you can only understand the mind being a flow when you establish your mind in a jhana. According to Southern tradition, to see this flow, you then leave the jhana. According to Northern tradition, you practice vipassana in the jhana. But the experience is the same. Explanation can be different. This is what makes study of Buddhism so interesting. The same experience can be described in different traditions in a different way. Why? Because the words are misleading. The Buddha explains very clearly these experiencing, they cannot be described by the words. At the time, the mind will be resting, having attained happiness, which cannot be compared with any sensual pleasure of lustful person. So, this is the state of purity. State of purity is much more blissful than whatever bliss we can experience with our bodies. Why? Because the subtle is always more blissful than the gross. Why? Because the subtle enables upeksha, enables balance. The gross does not enable balance. Only the subtle enable balance. That's why after describing Upeksha practice, we have this explanation. In order to stay in jhana, one needs Upeksha and one needs Prashrabdhi. This is, if Upeksha and Prashrabdhi becomes natural, one becomes a master of meditation. So then comes the description of enlarging and shrinking the mental image according to one's wish to the Jambudvipa continent and from the Jambudvipa back to 1 inch until one attains mastery. The same description you will find in other scriptures. This is Kasina practice. And of course, Kumarajiva cannot but explain that this contemplation leads on one hand to disenchantment or disillusionment. It is a better Venerable Chetso, she has found a very wonderful word for this Nibbida, Nirvana, disillusionment. So this disillusionment with the body and the practice of creating from the disillusionment beautiful object and from the beautiful object again disillusionment is a wonderful practice, which gives you mastery of these sensations. When one is master of these sensations, one is master of meditation. This is the same principle in all tradition, same principle in yoga, same principle, the principle of getting the mastery of the mind. And this is the deepest science that we humans have created so far. So let us finish here. And